and welcome to the Skills Provision Podcast. On today's episode, we will be discussing Romania. But first, a little about Skills Provision. We are an international recruitment agency, and on this podcast, from week to week, we discuss various different topics around recruitment and related employment topics. On today's episode, we have myself, Francesca. We also have Chris.
Hello, everybody.
We have Pete.
Hi.
And we have Dan joining us today.
Hello, everyone.
Brilliant. So, being the youngest on this podcast, I feel like I've got less to offer from a history perspective when it comes to Romania. Dan, we'll come to you. As just for our listeners out there and for everyone's benefit, Dan himself, Romanian national, living in Romania. So he's going to be able to give us a real kind of first-hand experience and account of his time through various different phases that have entered and gone through Romania. So, Chris, first of all, tell me a little bit about the history of Romania in, say, the last sort of, 50 years.
Is that because I'm the oldest one on the podcast?
It may have something to do with that.
Oh, right, okay. Last 50 years, I would say the biggest change was the Berlin Wall coming down, and the consequence of that as far as Romania was concerned and most other Eastern European countries breaking away from the domination of Russia and becoming free states. With your indulgence, I would just like to say something about the ancient history of Romania, although I wasn't alive at the time.
I was going to say, are we talking about when you were like 13, 14?
Yeah, well, when Miss Yusena and I were busy on a tour in Romania, it's a very ancient society and very well known for all sorts of things that if you are unaware, you wouldn't know. We all know about Bram Stoker and Transylvania and Dracula and all the rest of it. But they've got, you know, very famous history. I read up only in the last few days about the fact that I always thought Whittle invented the jet engine, but apparently a Romanian did, which was news to me. And also the history, they're very much a Roman-orientated society, strong historical links, particularly with France, which Dan might pick up on later. But we'll no doubt we'll cover what's happened in the last 30 to 40 years as we move through the podcast.
Yeah. Now, Pete, you kind of offer a slightly different perspective in that from your time in the military and things like that. I don't know. Was Romania ever a country that you kind of had any exposure to?
No. Kosovo, not too far away. We had a nice 6-month tour there under a power station, sucking in the fumes that were. We thought we were all going to die within a year. And then they got the environmental health people out to say that we were fine because the particles we were breathing in all day were actually too big to cause us any problems. So, weird. But you know, I've had a property in, I owned a property in Bulgaria, not too far. Transited through Romania a few times driving there, and a 6-month tour of duty in Kosovo.
Okay. So, Dan, I suppose over to you. Now, not being on this planet as long as Chris, but your experience for you in Romania, give us a little bit of history about yourself and then about what you have seen Romania evolve to be to today.
Well, I cannot say I'm a witness of the history of Romania 50 years ago, because that's my entire age. Still, I can say that not only the jet engine was discovered by Henry Quandu, a Romanian native, also the pinball was also made by a Romanian native. Also, we have one of the eldest written evidences over 6,000 years ago. And there is some strange thing because Chris mentioned Romans. Well, you know, actually Romans occupied only about 40% of all Romania called Dacia in that time. The other part, the 60%, they cannot occupy it. They just cannot. How big was it? The Roman Empire? They was stumbled on a piece of peanut like Dacia in front of them. And there is another thing. We are a Latin language speaking, surrounded by Slav language speaking, or Russia, Bulgaria, Hungary, if you want, also is not Latin language. So all around us, we are an island of Latin country. We've maintained our language, so if I can hear someone for 1,500 years ago speaking, I can understand him. So we maintained our language since, I can say, since Christ to the current days. So that's what about our history on a large view.
Okay. Now,
about me and my view of Romania inside of skill provision. Well, I can say that I've been with skills provision there are a few years already. I don't remember how many. 4, 5, I don't. But that was the best part of my life.
And what type of, okay, so in terms of for you with recruiting, because obviously and employment and stuff, and that's where the main focus of our podcasts are, what has been your experience or involvement with regards to recruiting from or to Romania? Just kind of give me some examples of maybe industries you've worked with.
Well, at the beginning of my recruiting career, I started to recruit care assistants to work in the UK from Romania. Of course, that was before Brexit. And what I found in that time, and I still can find now, is a kind of reluctance of Romanian candidates on that level speaking, so low-skilled or unskilled workers, to prove evidence of what they can actually do. They don't see the meaning of a CV, of a simple resume. They don't see why they should send you references, why they should send you documents. They know what they have to do. That's in their view.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I cannot find them totally guilty of this feeling. But, you know, coming after 40 years of communism, when you actually didn't need this because you finished high school and you were kind of compulsory to go to work, otherwise go to jail. So you don't need a CV, you don't need reference, you don't need qualification because everything is sent directly from the system to your next job, where you will actually get retired after 40 years of work. And that was the communist system. So nobody during 40 years understood what CV means and what is that for.
Okay, massive change, isn't it? It's a massive change in mentality. And do you feel like you've seen that change more now? Obviously, it's some years ago since those changes.
Yeah, there is a change. There is a change, especially in the skilled and highly skilled candidates. They know now that they need, and they know actually what they learn to. They learn to market themselves in front of everywhere, which is very good.
Dan, would you say that that had anything to do with the fact that Romania had, if you can do the work, you've got a job. If you can't do the work, you're fired on the spot, no notice periods and all the rest. So the burden of paperwork that we have in the West was deemed to be unnecessary?
Well, no. I was saying that during the communist times, so during the 45 years period, There was no need even to have skills or to prove your skills. Nothing.
Yeah, you just got you got put in a job and that was it, and you had to suck it up and do it. And if you couldn't, that was it. You were going to do it regardless.
And whatever, in most of the cases, there was even not necessary for you to understand what you are doing or to know something. Because mostly, either you have to mock that you are working, because it was a government company, and anyway, you are taking the salary, the same salary, even if you are working with you, even if you are not. And the promotions, the so-called promotions, were more done if you were a Communist Party member, if you were a syndicate member or union member or something like this.
Okay.
Anything was related to be a communist leader or aspire to be a communist leader. If you were a person like this, then yes, you are promoted, you have increases in your salary, but there is nothing connected to your skills, nothing connected to your profession. So all these things was lost over the 45 years period. Then suddenly you need them.
And also, Dan, Russian was the second language, wasn't it?
After the Second World War, yeah, it was kind of a second language. It was a compulsory language to be learned. Personally, I studied about 6 years Russian in the primary school, but to my shame, I can say only about 10 words in Russian.
It's 10 more than I can say. So, I suppose from our side, thank you for that, Dan. And from our side and where we've kind of been involved in recruitment with regards to Romania, a lot of our work, as Dan's kind of talked about, is in a pre-Brexit world where the demand in the UK, Romanians established themselves to be a hardworking group of people, and anyone and everyone was kind of leaning towards them for their staff, especially at some of those trade levels, low-skilled, agricultural work, healthcare was a big one, welding. Chris, I believe you had some Romanian welders.
It was everything. We did transactions involving several hundred bus drivers for a global player that won a couple of contracts and then found out they didn't have the drivers. So where did they go? Romania.
Mm-hmm. And then that's just as a UK example, but we've had and place workers across Europe, again, a lot of across the construction trade engineering side of things, because obviously Romania benefiting from that freedom of movement since they were added into the European Union, and into the Middle East, where a lot of companies view Eastern European as, again, a very good skill set, especially in, say, like the oil and gas and engineering. Pete, I know that your son operates in the oil and gas and engineering side. Has your son ever mentioned about the nationalities that he comes across? Has he been involved with working with many candidates from Romania or employees from Romania?
No, nothing that I would like to repeat on air, but yeah. I don't think he's that bothered, to be honest. He's a young boy, works in the oil and gas, interested in getting the job done. There's a lot of people that are not interested in getting the job done. Lazy, demotivated, self-orientated, and he's the complete opposite. So,
okay.
I think he also supervises on quite a few jobs and has done in the North Sea. So I think he has quite a few run-ins with various nationalities and nothing singled out, but they're an eclectic mix thrown together and can cause a few issues. I'd like to discuss something that I found out last week and something that I think Chris would be interested in. That in the Irish Examiner on the 19th of January this year, it was reported that, including the Romanians, migrants from Eastern European countries working in Ireland earn an average of 40% less per hour than their Irish counterparts, according to latest research. Now, I do know that we've been strong advocates that the overseas labour that we place should never be considered cheap labour. It is suitable labour, so it's quite alarming to read that as we're moving forward and now into 2023 that 40%, Chris?
Well, it's plainly, Pete, it's wrong. But that's the employers in Ireland deciding on those sorts of levels. And mainly those jobs are being filled by Eastern Europeans because the Irish don't want to do them. It's very similar in other countries as well. You know, Germany is a big user of Eastern European labour because the Germans don't want to do the low-skilled jobs. You can apply the same to a lot of countries.
I think the issue, one of the issues that we face in international recruitment is the view of the employer, whoever it may be. Ireland is just one example of viewing that certain candidates from certain countries or economic climates are worth less than their counterparts may be. It's a wrong perception to have, because I'm very much of the opinion if someone's doing the same job as someone else, they should be paid exactly the same. That goes to the same thing for nationality, for gender, because you hear a lot about women being underpaid. And yeah, I think that's, especially considering how far along we are now, I'd be expecting hearing something like that 40%, Pete, if I'm honest, I don't know, 5-10 years ago. I'm surprised to be hearing statistics like that still being so prevalent.
Yeah, and the list of countries is, you know, EU, Cyprus, Czech Republic, Estonia, Hungary, Latvia, Lithuania, Malta, Poland, Slovakia, Slovenia, Bulgaria, Romania and Croatia. So, as Chris said, these are employer. If they, there's nothing in place to stop it happening, is there? That's the problem. And
There isn't within the EU. But there isn't in certain other countries where you have to pay any worker the same rate after a qualifying period. And the qualifying period is quite short. It's about 13 weeks. And that's why, if you like, the UK is not on the list.
I think that information that you've just shared, Pete, kind of leads me on to about different countries. Now, Romanians, or my exposure to Romanians, has been a lot more focused on people wanting to leave Romania and Romanians seeking work outside as opposed to perhaps placing into Romania. So according to Statista, in terms of where Romanians are looking to work, there's about at least 8 million Romanians that are living outside of the country's borders, according to estimates by the State Secretary. However, that number is probably higher. There'll be a lot of people that we don't necessarily all know about. But in terms of countries, what do you think is the top country that Romanians are travelling to? What's your guess? Dan, what's your guess? Which country do you think is top?
Well, currently, or I may speak on 2022, because 2023 just started.
There's no date associated with this information, so I'd say it's the most recent information that was available. So let's say over the last couple of years.
Over the last couple of years, the first place would be Germany.
Excellent guess.
So the last couple of years, that means after Brexit, because before Brexit, UK was one of the leading countries. And after Germany, we have Belgium and Netherlands, and then is coming Ireland. Ireland is coming on this position only because of the geographical position, geographical distance, actually, from Romania.
Mm-hmm. So the other countries that actually they said have a quite high percentage are Italy, about 15%, and Spain, about 11%.
When the migration started in Italy and Spain, and that was because Italian language is 70% the same like the Romanian language. And Spanish language is about 45 to 50% the same like Romanian language. So it was very near, very, very easy for a Romanian person to accommodate into their countries.
Okay.
Now, the salaries, as you know, in Italy are not excellent. In Spain, also. What they found there, and they built a community around, was the almost the same kind of people, if I can put it like this. They are Latin people also, so it's more easily for us to get more near to them instead of going to Germany, which are Slav people, and they are more strict in some ways, including work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think there's a problem where Western European companies, people, underestimate the people in the East big time. And I know Skills Provision placed a Polish worker into a South Yorkshire coal company, and he was the best person they'd ever seen. And as I said earlier, when I was on about, I worked in the military in Kosovo, although it's not Romania, but it's not that far off. Well, we employed 20 or 30 local engineers. Sort of as a goodwill thing after their houses have been, we bombed them. Then the Serbs were in there torturing them and burning them out of their houses and all that kind of stuff. We so employed a group of them, not great to start with, and then within a month, at a level that was a lot higher than our own engineers.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy, crazy standards and amazing workers. So there's always been this thing with me of you need to be careful who you underestimate, because just because people are paid lowly or looked down upon, treated poorly, there's some very, very clever operators in the East. Skills area.
But Dan, why are so many Romanians working internationally?
There are many reasons. And for one of them, I'm also working kind of internationally, even if I'm working from home. Getting recognized, getting your skills recognized inside of the country is almost impossible. We have as educated, let's say, entrepreneurs, actually the ex-smugglers during the communist time, who was managing to steal millions, and then when the time comes, they just invested. They took advantage of the fact that there was no legislation for anything almost after the 1990. So they built millions. They built millions on bribing, on smuggling. And after that, they start showing off like big entrepreneurs without actually having any entrepreneurial skills or education. And this is what our employers are, most of them. And this is what our, let's say, targets looks like for the young generation.
Okay. What's the average pay salary in Romania, Dan?
Currently, the average salary is about, I would say about £500, the equivalent in Romanian money.
Is that gross or net, Dan?
Net speaking.
Okay.
So really, the exodus is because of economic reasons of having to find a better quality of life somewhere else.
So I was going to say, just on that point, according to Statista, the top three reasons that have been given for workers leaving Romania: corruption, 33%, 31.3%, sorry, poor living standards around the 30%, and then 21.8%, so let's call it 22%, is the lack of job opportunities. That just shows you some of the reasons. But what, with your, I suppose, recruiter head on, what do candidates come to you looking for when they're looking for an opportunity?
Well, I had various range of candidates. I had candidates looking for just for a better income without having a future view of where they will spend that income actually and on what. They just compare the, like I told you, the £500 salary from Romania with £1,500 in the UK, let's say. But there is no such a comparing problem. And I found also candidates, quite highly skilled candidates, rushing out of Romania in order to find a country where they can grow their kids better. And that was it was like a stone in the head for me. So you are running away from your country and trying to find a country where to make a future for your kids, not for yourself. Even that in your own country, you are making like 4,000 to 5,000 euros per month without problem. So money is not a problem.
It's almost, and then that's going to have a knock-on effect to the future generations, isn't it? It's bleeding, for lack of a better word, bleeding the country dry.
Somehow it is good, and I'll tell you why. As long as in Romania in the last 33 years the educational system was smashed, it was turned into pieces, our only chance is for the youngest generation who was educated either in the UK, in Ireland, France, or wherever, and they are coming with the education from there back to Romania and rebuild. Because from here, you will not believe what is with the educational system. There is no more educational system, actually. We have young people finishing high school, 18, 19 years old, and don't know where to go further.
So where do the IT skills come from then, Dan?
Well, the IT skills was starting a few good years back, out of curiosity of some people who were searching over the internet, and some young guy who are just looking into a computer and trying to hack something. Okay?
So not necessarily going with the best of intentions to start with.
Not necessarily, but from this bad intentions was born a school. It was born the Romanian IT school. They started to get classes on the internet, and then they started to teach others what they learned. And step by step, they had the time, they had the mindset and the ambition to overcome any other nationality, let's say. And that is because, someone said before, I don't remember, I think Chris said, that Romanians were seen as low-skilled, as something which you are not exactly willing to give a high responsibility job. So they were trying always to overcome this stone, and they made it. We have now two IT hubs, pretty big. We have Romanian language as a second language in Microsoft. And yeah, we pretty much other target accomplished by these guys. They're pretty big now, and they know what they're asking for. They know what they're doing.
But it's not just IT, Dan, is it? You know, I think in a way we're painting a very bleak picture of Romania, because there's a lot of strengths that Romania still has. Oil and gas is one. It's one of the oldest oil and gas industries in the world. Shipping's another strong one as well. And because of the French connection, which you might want to add to in a second, Dan, Dacia is a leading car producer in Romania. So, it, you know, it's not all bad news, is it?
Well, actually, all this strength is coming from the old school. And we have some industries where we still have some old teachers who are really doing lessons there. No, they're doing their job normally. That's the oil and gas, as you mentioned. There is also the maritime school, which is also very highly recognized internationally. The IT part, and I think that's about it. Because the, you know, the jobs, like normal job as a turner, as a welder, as they're going to like a 3-month school to get a welder certificate or a chef certificate.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a welder after 3 months, that's not a chef after 3 months. That's definitely not. Can be a junior, or I don't know if he's anything under the junior.
Mm-hmm. So, okay. So we've been talking a lot about exporting from Romania. What about recruiting into Romania? What have you seen happening in that respect? In conversations that I've had with some candidates who are potentially looking to either go back, Romanian nationals themselves, or we get a lot of candidates from your African and Asian nations considering Romania as a place for them to move to. Have you seen an increase in demand for workers from outside of Europe?
There is an official increase of requests from workers from outside of Europe, let's say, from Asian workers, more exactly. And that's going in almost all low-skilled and unskilled job. In construction job, it's going in restaurants, it's going in delivery, jobs like this. So they are yearly, importing about 40,000 low-skilled or unskilled workers from Asia.
In what time frame, Dan? In a year, is that?
In a year, yeah.
It's almost like it causes a global game of musical chairs where the Romanian lower-end skills look to move to the West to do better pay, bring their families up, all that kind of stuff, leaving a void behind them. Then gets filled by the Asians who come in. They'll probably stay for 10 years. They'll start moving to the West, and the Africans will follow in behind them. Very much like what's happened in the food industry in the UK. And I think when the Africans have done and dusted, they're not going to work in difficult conditions for very little. That'll be the end of it. There won't be any low-skilled workers willing to do the work. And the next generation, my kids won't work for... They're still to work for their mother for about £12 an hour, and there's no way. You know what I mean? They want their... Lewis, he's anything under £200-£300, he ain't interested. So it's where is the next generation of low-skilled workers going to come from? Because they ain't going to satisfy the whole of the world.
No.
And we do see that, Chris, don't you, with the polls, where initially it was the polls into the UK. They got greedy, moved, were looking more at Scandinavia, moving away. Then the Romanians, Bulgarians, Latvians, and then obviously Brexit happened. But
well, and also you've got another part of Europe here, the bit that lies to the east of what's commonly called Eastern Europe. Kosovo would be one example, but the main player there would be the Ukraine, and they were a huge exporter of people before the Ukrainian war. Turkey has been a great source of labour as well. Poland, you mentioned, they took in 1.5 million Ukrainians for exactly the reasons you say, because the people to do the low-skilled job have gone off elsewhere. And so the void needed to be filled.
Yeah. And I think something I just want to touch on there, I think we have talked a lot about the lower-skilled roles, but it's important to note that those aren't necessarily just the only skills that are available, and we have touched on IT being one, but according to Statista, over 2 in 5, which is about 44%, of Romanians that work in a senior or specialist position, and that's about 14% higher than the global average. But when it comes to the manager or executive level, it is lower than counterparts for, say, Western Europe.
You find is sometimes is that certainly in the food industry and others, where the low skilled workers may be predominantly Romanian, and then they will want Romanian supervisors and managers because they're more suited to dealing with them. So they sort of bring in the hierarchy chain thereafter.
But at the mid and upper level, again, I'm going to sort of take issue a little bit with what Dan said about the education system. We find that the people are very well educated and have linguistic skills and are up there with any other nationality.
Do you think, Dan, there's become this expectation amongst Romanian nationals that it's kind of expected maybe at some point that they're going to have to go abroad, or that is the way that it goes, that going to work abroad and then maybe return home is the new norm? For example, in comparing it to, say, somewhere like the Philippines, in conversations with colleagues, where, just taking healthcare as an example, nearly every family has a nurse, and the idea for that nurse is that they're going to go work abroad and be able to send money home by moving to those better paid countries. Do you view that Romanians view themselves as a commodity? And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way, but they know their value. They know that they're wanted.
They know their value. They know that they are wanted, but they don't like to see themselves as a commodity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They can be seen as something valuable in a company. It doesn't matter if it's a Romanian or Slovenian or German company, but not as a commodity. They cannot be, bear the thought that they can be exchanged for something, that their value can be exchanged for something.
I think that's right, Dan, that in my experience, the Eastern Europeans, maybe following from communist times or whatever, they tend not to say a lot. You know, where you can get the American, British, Canadians, they'll shout and scream how good they are at everything and all this kind of stuff. When I was working in Kosovo with the managing the 30 local tradesmen, as well as probably 70 or 80 British that were out there, British Army, there was one man, local, fairly elderly, who appeared to know everything about what was going on and all. He was that good we just let him get on. He was managing the old boys and helping, showing them what to do on equipment he'd never seen before, and was fairly amazing. And after about 2 or 3 months, I was speaking to someone and said, it was like a liaison officer. Who is he? I've never seen anyone like him operate before. He don't say anything. You smile, hello, good morning, that's about it. And he went, oh, so you knew whatever his name was. He's the number one aircraft technician in the whole of Kosovo. I was like, aircraft? We're fixing vehicle. He goes, oh, he knows it all. He goes, he'll be here because of, you'll be paying good money. But he just loves the work. He loves the people. He never said anything. Number one main man, engineer, no matter what, in the whole of the country. And you couldn't get two peeps out of him about, he just saw underwell, you learn a lot from these people, and there's some humility lessons to be learned as well. And it was just fantastic. The whole experience of managing these guys for probably best part of 6 months was special. Something that stayed with me, and I learned a lot. A lot, hell of a lot. Certainly about that area. So they don't, you're right, Dan, they're not, what's the word you said? They don't.
They don't view themselves as a commodity. And I don't, and I mean.
They get angry with that, you start treating them poorly, and they won't be treated poorly. They'll do a fair day's work, fair day's pay, but they will not be mistreated. I think they've had enough of that, to be honest.
And that's going to lead me on to kind of the next area I kind of want to move on to. Is the changes that we've seen, either with the workers themselves and the viewpoints, but also changes that we've seen in the demand and hiring from Romania. So one of the first points is knowing their value. So kind of going back to that point that you made at the earlier in the podcast, Pete, with regards to Eastern European people being paid less. I think that was very much the perception that a lot of people in the later part of the 2000s, early 2010s, that they were used to being considered a cheaper alternative. But now I think they are aware that they shouldn't be expected to be paid less, and they are worth as much as anyone else.
But the whole mix has changed. Back in the day when you say they were cheap labour, there was large levels of unemployment around.
Yes, this is true.
And therefore, people could use the cheap approach as a reason for employing people. And certainly, in many countries, driving down their costs to try and remain competitive in global markets. Now, since COVID, we've not touched on COVID and must come back to it, the whole thinking has changed dramatically. And the world is short of virtually all skills. Anything associated with the STEM industries are global shortages everywhere. And so I think Romanians IT, Dan mentioned the two hubs they've got already, and you've seen inward investment into Romania because of the skills that they've got, and Microsoft having Romanian as a second language. I didn't know that, Dan, so that's one for me to salt away for the future.
And it's like in conversations that we've had, I only had a couple weeks ago now with a US company, and finding out, so we're primarily US-based, but our engineering team's all in Romania.
Mm.
And it shows the value and the strength of Romania as a whole.
Yeah, Romania as a whole. But as Chris mentioned, the manufacturing part of employing everything what is actually cannot be done online. is going to scream for people. And that's because during COVID, one of the reasons can be that during COVID, we learned that we can stay at home, work from home. Just not everything can be done from home, you know.
Do you think there's a massive mentality shift then in terms of people looking more for those either remote or hybrid working opportunities and less people wanting to do those in-person roles?
Well, there was a lot of layoffs during COVID.
Mm-hmm.
Those people had to reorganize themselves to look for another opportunities in that time. And in that time, the only opportunity was online. So they kind of reconverse their job. Now, they understood that, okay, I can work either from home, either from the top of the mountain or from the sea, and I can have a good family life, probably, if they have the time. And I don't need to go anymore to, I don't know, pick the hammer.
I think COVID came as a huge shock to the whole world. And
I think that's an understatement.
And you know, Romanians have reacted in exactly the same way as many, many other nationalities. They don't want to be so far from home as they used to be prepared to go. So we've seen a real drop off from Eastern Europeans in general from wanting to take up lower skilled positions in the Middle East, for example. We've also seen in places like Australia, which is 90% international population and full of Greeks and Italians and people like that, and Eastern Europeans have just started to embrace people, places like Australia, but now they don't seem to be interested. It's too far from home.
It's not only too far from home, Chris. I don't know if in the UK was on TV that, let's say, shows what Australia was putting there during the COVID time, their hard restrictions and legislation and so on. And I personally wouldn't like to go and live there because I don't know if anything like this happen again, I would be like in chain.
I like these remote positions are interesting where they obviously suit and were suitable for the lazy. I can still watch telly, no one knows what I'm doing, and there'll be a lot of that. But as time's gone on and the remote positions and using remote workers has become more embedded, it is, and as such, more measurable on performance, work, attitude, the whole categories of those things, that we're starting to see the hard workers are being separated from the lazy, the demotivated, which can use the internet as a blanket to hide behind. And as with all of it, I think that there is a place for remote, a big place, but it's going to have to, the whole thing's going to have to continually develop until such times as it's the quality workers, and we're the same place in. We're putting the right people in there. Because the right people working online doesn't matter. You can make a big difference, can be a big assistance to companies. It's got to be put in. The hard yards have got to be put in, and isn't all the time.
And with modern communications for a lot of jobs, it doesn't matter where you are, you can do the job just as efficiently. However, and disappointingly, remote job opportunities are beginning to decline at the moment. Now, my own view is that That is because managers do not know how to manage remote workers. As most of you will know, Skills has been working remotely since 2005. So we've managed to learn how to do it okay. You've got to trust your people and have the controls in place to make sure that they're not pulling the wool over your eyes.
I think something else that, from, I suppose, my kind of viewpoint is that I feel like in my shorter lifetime, there has been this real divide of East and West Europe in terms of the West being Germany and Netherlands being viewed as superior in many ways and the Eastern European nations not being. But I do feel like now when we get inquiries from companies for not just the low skilled workers, but even those higher skill things, that Romania is definitely considered as a hub to hire from and to look for those opportunities, because they are and can be just as well connected and as well experienced. And something else that I kind of feel that, and it kind of goes back to the points made at the beginning, is that with so many workers leaving and then looking to return, sometimes those workers have got more of an overall world experience than those who have just only ever stayed within those one locate, that one country, that one location, and offer a more broad brush, universal exposure.
We are seeing more inquiries from Eastern European based companies looking to find workers for their own backyard than we've ever seen before, because of the situation that Pete said, it's a merry-go-round. So in the case of Romania, they're going to Germany, so there's a void. So people in Romania are looking to fill the void. Where do they look? Well, there's Africans and Asians banging on every door wanting to come in if they can get in. And so that's just the cycle.
There also is this, and you're on about the East-West divide there, Francesca, where there is the criminal elements that seems to emanate from the poor areas, certainly in the younger generations, where they don't have but they want, and there's no point hanging around in the rural areas of the Eastern Europe to deal drugs, weapons, criminal behaviour, whereas there will be a bigger market for it in the West, and there is. And when I was in Berlin when the wall came down, and the first noticeable thing, because when they say the wall came down, there was only a little bit of the wall came down, like just en masse people just ran across. It was just behind the Reichstag, a little bit of wall came down initially, but within about 6 months, the noticeable change was the crime rate went up a lot. And whilst it's a less of an issue, it is a problem. You know, it's because, like you say, Dan's already said that people have the average, and you may be at the lower end of that average, when the average earnings is £500 a month, some people want 50 times that. We see it all the time. So that these social problems do come. They're generational changes. Things. It's almost like you need a rebalancing where the wealth is rebalanced. So the wealth of the West is mirrored with the wealth of the East. And then you've just got their normal movements of people for ethical reasons, not other reasons. And we've not, I don't know the last time, or has there ever been, Chris, where the East and West have had like a wealth balance?
Not that I'm aware of, Pete. There are countries who have got economic strength and wealth, and others that haven't. But you can see things are changing rapidly with the emergence of China as now the number two country in the globe, and India is up to number four, I think. And good old Great Britain has dropped from third to eighth. I don't know where Romania now focuses. Dan, have you got any idea?
Well, for the moment, I cannot see a focus exactly for Romania, as everyone is just focusing on his own pocket. So there is no common national focus.
We are seeing more Chinese and in that area registering at skills provision. The numbers are higher than ever and increasing. So things are changing.
And Dan, in terms of from your experience on the ground, are there any other changes that you've noticed, say over the last 10 years? Because we've covered a lot of history, but this is not a history podcast. What changes have you seen with regards to employment and recruiting for you, either personally or in your work that you've been doing with us?
Well, there is a change. There is a slight improvement, either in the employer side, Romanian employers, either in the employer candidate side. They slowly start to understand that they need each other, actually. There is no place where just employers stay without the employees and other way around. So they started to kind of reach to small agreements between the employees and manager, general manager, and so on. What I've noticed inside the country is a decrease of manifestations. You know, like the syndicate is taking, the union is taking out the people because there is low salary or so on. No, they are not reaching to that point anymore so fast. It might happen like 2-3 times a year in the whole country. So they start to understand that they need each other and they have to somehow accommodate each other. It's a small step, but it's a good step, because from here they will start to understand that everyone, candidates on their side, they have to show themselves, market, improve themselves, train, and increase their skills level. And employers on their side, they will have to understand that in order to have a good business, you need to have trained, skilled, competitive employees. And that's what we are going to, but in a small steps.
From your point, with regards to recruiting into Romania, I know we have touched on the fact that with unemployment levels having dropped and this whole cyclical nature of country taking other countries' workers, what nationalities have you seen most recently looking to relocate to Romania, and in what kind of skills? Has it always been those lower skilled roles? According to Bradford Jacobs, about 18% of the workforce is, apparently the highest percentage of non-local European Union citizens in its workforce at 18%. Romania is the highest within the European Union. Would you say that is true, what you see? Because just for the listeners out there, Dan, whereabouts in Romania are you based?
Well, I'm based on the seaside, east side of Romania, Constanța. And to answer to your question, you know, the most required nation here is Nepal. And then it's coming Philippines. And the most jobs offered for them are in constructions, not engineering, skilled or unskilled. and in restaurants, hotels, HoReCa system.
Okay.
Dan, if I could just go back to something you said a lot earlier. You said that the average income in Romania was around £500 in somebody's pocket each month, and if they came to Europe, it would be about £1,500 in their pocket. Could you just walk us through how Romanians look at international job opportunities, perhaps using Germany as an example, because it's where we see it most?
Well, they are looking not exactly for the job opportunity as for the kind of wealth opportunity, if you want. At that level, it can be a wealth, you know, if you are running away from if you are running away from 300 euro per month to 1,500, that's kind of a lot of money. So they are looking for the financial motivation first, and they are comparing what they are getting, what they are spending. For example, if I'm employed in Romania and I have here, let's say an average 500 euro per month, net salary. Now, I know that this amount of money I'll need to put into my family expenses every month. And if I'm going to work in Germany, as you said, and I'm going to be paid there for 1,500 euro, but out of 1,500, I'll have to pay 500 for the rent, another 500 for my own living there, then it will remain 500, actually, the same money which I'm making home, which I have to send home. So I'm leaving the home for nothing. Which means their calculation is to cover the home expenses and to have some spare money, apart from their monthly normal expenses like rent, facilities, whatever they are spending the money on outside.
Okay.
And they're very well versed into how maybe German companies operate, and therefore will know that the going rate for a welder is X euros per hour, and they'll be looking for X euros per hour, and they won't be looking to do a cheap deal.
No. The experience they got, you know, either from what they speak with other people, other, let's say, welders, they understood that they have to have a price for their work, and that the minimum price is generally what they heard of some friends that they are taking up. So if they heard someone that is taking like 20 euro per hour, okay, they said, I can take 20 euro per hour, why should I work for less? So if I'm coming with a 19 euro or 17 euro per hour, they said, no, just, my price is 20.
Mm-hmm.
Chris, you're the financial guru here. Exchange rates. So we've got £1 to 5.5 Romanian lu, I think it's pronounced. But yep. The average wage is £500 per month, which to me indicates that if you're over in, it's a bit like it's balanced in favor of the Romanians, isn't it?
Yep, in the Romanian currency. So it's about 2,500.
Can you say the questions again?
You employ someone in the UK and as a remote worker, they're Romanian, living in Romania, you pay them £1,000 per month, and they're actually, in their own currency, they're going to get 5,500 lev. I'm not sure what the lu. Oh, the lu. I'm not sure what the lu is to the euro. Should be similar.
Yeah, it is 4.95.
Yeah, it's almost like. It's a bit like our workers that in India, isn't it? That me and Francesca often joke about is that they're better off than we are. Is because
they have a much lower cost of living than we do.
Yes.
Yeah. That's the difference. But someone, it doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be Romania. It could be anywhere working remotely. If they're paid a Western-related wage and they're working remotely, they're making, in local terms, a fortune.
Yes. Which is probably why they're happy to work. I mean, I'm not sure about whether the remote workers in Romania, whether it's on the increase and it ever increased, I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the examples that we have seen are mainly related to the IT sector. And people go to Romania in the belief that they will be able to get workers at a beneficial rate overall, but it will still be at a premium to what the locals would earn with local businesses, but probably at a discount to what the employer would have to pay locally. But isn't that always been the case everywhere?
No, no. Me and Francesca need to move to Romania. I know that much, don't we, Francesca?
I think the thing is, it's one of this. I think what I see is this, and it's a common theme with employers across, not just for Romania, but it's they come with a shopping list, if you will, of what they want to see on a candidate or a candidate have, and there'll be 10 different things maybe on that shopping list, but they want to pay them. For someone, they want someone to have 8 years experience, but they're only paying at a market rate of what someone with 2 years is going to have experience. And they think that sometimes that translates that, okay, I can't get eight years experience at the price I want to pay, I don't know, in country. So I'll go out of country and hope to get the same kind of value for money. Sometimes that'll work. And I think, again, every worker is different. It depends what their value and what they value. Money is one thing that we've talked about, but Dan has touched on some other things, and it's like opportunities for family, opportunities for the wider kind of betterment of your life. So I think so many factors can be taken into consideration. But do you, and this kind of leads me on to the future, if you will. What do you see, and we'll go around the imaginary table, what are you seeing into the future when it comes to Romania? Pete, let's go with you, as you don't work in the recruitment side. From your perspective in general, where do you see Romania going?
I've no idea, to be honest, but I know where we're going, and that's a continuation of this unseen discrimination that's out there, where people are coming to us and saying, we want some Poles, we want some Romanians, we want some Latvians, we want British, we want Western, we want American. No, we don't work that way. We will do a lineup. We will produce all these suitable people for you. Nationality won't be relevant. It will be skills and ability based, with the matching the criteria. We will place into the client zone. You choose who you want. But we will not lean towards, you want Romanian? We'll just put Romanians in there. You want any, and it's, this is where we need to move away from. And then when you start educating people and they start looking and saying, wow, you've got some good Romanians in here and you've got some good, there's good everywhere. It's our job to find them. We don't discriminate. And I think that that's where we're going to go. And how will that affect Romania and Romanian people? They'll probably get a fairer crack of the whip down the road rather than being typecast into where you're only good for working on the building sites and you're only good for this and you're only good for that. They'll be integrated in as the same as everyone else. And then finally the sort of humorous part now, where in England you sort of don't know where people come from, because you go out and you can be in a shop, or I've just started going back to shops with a wife now, the kids have left home, is you get a sort of semi accent of something and you're like,
Yorkshire.
Yorkshire. Normally somewhere like Kazakhstan, but sounds 80-90% English. They've been here that long now, their language is, it is Yorkshire, yeah. But they're not from here. And they could be the Romanians and all. And at one time you knew them. You could, that was straight away. Now you're just not sure. And the further we go down the road, Chris, they're going to sound more English than what me and you do.
You have not got a clue where people come from now. Nowhere in the world. You could be served in a restaurant by any nationality there is from around the globe. You just do not know. But to go back to the way I see Romania into the future, the one thing that Dan said that does concern me is, if there is an absence of investment in education, then that is not good news for the people. If, however, they continue to produce the skills that they've been producing somehow or another in the last 20 or 30 years, and the people are interested in working internationally, I would feel quite happy to have Poles in your lineup to put before clients. Sorry, Romanians in the lineup to put before clients. I also see, because the economy in Romania is weak, that it is ripe for inward investment. We are seeing it already. Sorry to hark on about Dacia, but they've been investing so, Renault have been investing so heavily in Romania. How many vehicles does Dacia produce in Romania? Dan, any idea?
Well, if you want to refer of the investment inside of the country, we can see an increase on this part. And we can see a big increase on this part. I mean, there are billions invested after COVID, and most of them coming after the Ukrainian war. That actually, you know, actually the opportunity was higher. Ukraine was the main supplier of grain for Europe. We all know that. But once they're in the war, their grains were stuck at our border. Of course, we released them and let them into the world as soon as it was possible. But on the other side, the opportunity was for us to take over Ukraine on this part. So, hence was the investors coming and trying to, as they saw the opportunity, trying to take a profit out of that.
Yeah.
They made investments, but I have also some bad.
Yeah.
The investments, but the legislation was not exactly what they were looking for. The fiscal legislation, the financial legislation is changing like every 3 months, which is not exactly giving stability, especially in agriculture when you are looking for at least 1 year to have profit, if not 3, 5, 10. So you don't, if you don't have fiscal legislation fixed, then you're gone.
What's the effect of the war in Ukraine had Romania on the economy, housing prices, people wanting to move into the area to work, or anything like that?
Well, I'll start it with housing prices, and I will start it with just the examples I have locally here in Constanza. So right after the war, as everyone knows, as all the world knows, we kind of open our borders for the war immigrants, Ukrainians. And we realized then that actually the one who came first was the smugglers from Ukraine who were starting buying blocks of apartments, renting apartments on an offering already. So, you know, when the price for an apartment is, let's say, 300 euro per month, and you are coming and you are offering publicly 450 euro per month. So you are not taking the offer for 300, but you're offering 450 because you want it now. Then the price increase, of course. So one way or another, they came with a lot of money on the Romanian market, which was leading to inflation. On the other side, the Romanian government, with the help of Brussels, provided to each Ukrainian immigrant kind of monthly income, which, by the way, is a bit higher than the average a Romanian guy is taking working. And that means another amount of money on the market without covered by work. So, yeah, they produce inflation, first of all. It is about working, Ukrainian people working in Romania. Well, I think there are no more than 5,000 top as a number of Ukrainians who are working in Romania right now, because there is no need to work, actually. The government is giving you money if you stay. See? They're paying bills, paying rent, so there is no need for work.
And if we turn the circle completely around and go back to the beginning when we were talking about horse and carts, Lenin, war, and all this, these times, what's the feeling in Romania regarding military action, Putin, and expanding into Romania?
In the beginning, there was a fear. That was in the beginning, a year or something ago when the war started. So right now, it's more like everybody's bored. Okay, again Putin, again war, again warheads, again rockets. Okay, let's change the channel. Something like this. We clearly understood that everything is political, and there's nothing going to be for real a threat.
Okay. Do you, I suppose, my perspective in terms of what I can see happening and also some things that I'd like to see, I echo both Dan and Chris's concern with the fact that there's that lack of education. How does the future look? All of these companies that are looking to expand, regardless of where they're from, and they open a entity or whatever it may be, within the country, I do feel, and how this would happen, I would never claim to know, but I do feel like they should be the ones also investing in the educational side of things. If they're looking to expand their operations in, they should be looking to give back to the community, the country, to try and promote.
In theory, you're right.
Yeah, in theory, I was going to say, theory is a wonderful thing.
Yeah. Well, perhaps I could... Practically, it's happening in the reverse.
Mm. Perhaps I could just read something here. It says, the Romanian economy performed better than expected, growing at 5.8% in the first half of 2022 on the back of robust private consumption performance and early signs of investment recovery. And here's the kicker. Prospects depend on the evolution of the war in Ukraine and its impact on the European economy. And I think that probably says it all, doesn't it?
Well, I think that certainly the West Britain were, and not realizing, too dependent on the Ukraine, the car market, many components were made in the Ukraine, specialist components, couldn't be made anywhere else. Cars are all of a sudden, it's taking 2 years to get a new car. Still a problem. And you just see that all this specialist skills, items, and naturally probably will move into Romania, which will be considered more safe because of NATO, part of the EU, this kind of stuff, because it's still needed. So I think that's going to happen.
Yeah, in theory, that's going to happen. That's what's supposed to happen after the war started. That was supposed to happen. But, you know, it's not enough to have a geographical position affordable and to have to be covered by NATO as protection. You have to have the legislation who can allow employers or managers or investors to make predictions for medium and long term. Without a prediction, you cannot open a business.
One thing I don't think is appreciated is just how close certain of the Eastern European countries are to Ukraine. Because literally, you're just across the water in Constanza, aren't you, from Ukraine?
Well, I'm about, so from where I'm staying right now, I think I'm about 170 kilometers.
So that's what I was saying, Chris, about the fear of escalation, because I know fine well it's not that far away. In fact, I think it's the next block on it, next one along.
And if I was an international investor at the moment, I would be very nervous about increasing my investments in most Eastern European countries whilst the Putin threat continues.
That depends if you see the Putin's threat as a real threat or just as a political show.
That's true. And I think that's the thing, isn't it? There's two sides to that, isn't there? There's those of us who are fortunate enough that we've not been impacted on a personal level, but I think for those in Ukraine, you feel very different, to feel that is a very real threat considering what we've seen go on.
For the normal people in Ukraine right now, there is a hell.
Yeah,
absolutely.
They're living literally in hell.
In terms of, I suppose, one kind of final point, Dan, and then I think I'll wrap this podcast up, is you, a Romanian worker, what do you see as your future as a worker? Where are you looking? What are you looking for? What are your must-haves? What are your nice-to-haves? What does a future look like for you?
For me as a Romanian worker?
Yes.
Not you as a Dan,
Me as a Romanian citizen.
You're representing the whole of Romania. We've got you at Eurovision, imagine. You're representing your country.
Your wife, Dan. What's your wife going to do?
What my wife's going to do? Well, wait, what she is doing. Work, home, sleep, work, home, sleep. Never get the time to think. So that's a communist style. Regarding the future of our workforce, which I think this is the direction you are heading me, Francesca.
Yes, correct.
The future is, I can see bright. I can see the light at the end of the tunnel, only that is a very, very long. But we can see the light at the end. As I said, even though the educational system is down, as you said, we have over 8 million people outside. They are educating themselves and sending their kids out there for education. Which means the fact that the educational system here is down, it will affect our workforce future only in a 50% match or something.
You feel you feel like you've been duped, Dan, as in the promise of the EU money didn't materialise as it was expected or people thought?
Well, I was very near to burst the promise of the EU. I will just not put it on the air. Let's say just when someone is promising you something and is coming from the Brussels direction, is not meant to happen. And one way or another, we are learning currently this. Okay, so we don't put our hopes in Brussels. We put our hopes for our future, for the future of our workforce, in ourselves. And that is a statement of a Romanian citizen for all Romania. Okay. We know definitely that we have the only chance coming from us, not from Brussels, not from Moscow, not from Washington or London or Paris or whatever. It's either coming from us or it's not coming at all. That's why I said that the educational system in Romania is broken down to pieces, because that was the target at the Brussels. But we managed to make our educational, our people educated outside of this system. And some of them, not 8 million will come back, but if 1 million is coming back of 8, then our workforce will revive, survive, and grow better than any other country. I'm pretty sure of that.
What about the generation before the younger? What about the early 20s now, Dan, in Romania? What are these doing? Are they finding skilled labour? Are they happy?
No. We cannot speak about happiness and skilled labour in Romania on the same level or in the same time. To be skilled at 20s, you should start working at 16, honestly speaking. You should start working at 16, so at 20 you have some skills. You have 4 years experience already, so you have some skills. Finding a job in Romania which will improve your skill and train you for that is really hard. And that's because if you are going as an unskilled, you are treated as an unskilled for the length of your employment contract. No way to go up.
What are you seeing, Chris, about the age, and you, Francesca, with the age of the skilled workers from Eastern Europe? Are they predominantly, are they elderly? And we're not seeing the 20s, early 30s? Yeah.
Right, the break point was really 1989 when the second language moved from Russian to English, and that obviously took a bit of time to work its way through the system. So it was in the sort of very late 1990s, early this century, that you began to see Romanian workers that could speak reasonable English becoming available. But the level is pretty low at the trade level, and it has always been a problem, not just with Romania but Eastern Europeans, is their ability to communicate in another language. And that's why so many of them have ended up taking much lower skilled jobs than perhaps their skills warrant, because they can't communicate. What surprises me, that English, fortunately for us, is the world language, is why more have not tried to improve their language themselves to open up opportunities. If you look at other countries, that does happen. And particularly with Asians whose parents invest heavily in their education, which includes language training, whereas it's not the thing that's done in Eastern Europe.
Yeah, and I think from my point, I think it depends on the industry, depends on a lot of factors as to the types of people we see. I'd say hospitality and those sort of roles, maybe more younger focused, those where perhaps their English language skills are better. But as we say, from a trade perspective, those that are highly skilled tend to be those with the poorer level of English, which is a shame, especially with most countries being English as a prerequisite. We're talking about the UK with the visa requirements, English being something that they have to have. Same if they wanted to go to Australia, New Zealand. There are those minimum languages. So, yeah, I think...
And that's where the Middle East has done so well, because it doesn't hang its hat on the ability to someone to tick a box in terms of language. They're more after the skills than they are the language, and that's why they've been so successful in recruiting globally, and enabled them to recruit people at, how should we put it, advantageous terms and conditions.
Have we got the ultimate ticking time bomb here, Chris, where I know my son went for an interview with this local company. He's gone in there as a pipe fitter. They're quite a decent company. He's got his own van tools, all this, and they were asking him what he'd done, where he'd been, his experience. Obviously worked in Singapore in the dockyards, offshore. Someone said, don't be asking how old are you, 23. And he was absolutely blown away, shocked, as they all were, all the directors in the room. But obviously my son's an anomaly, and is there going to be a massive global shortage of skilled workers in 30 years?
There's a massive shortage now, Pete. Not 30 years, now. Airbus, for example, announced just, I read it this morning, that having recruited 13,000 people last year, they're looking for another 13,000 this year, just to handle the projects that they have in line. And they're not going to find those people in their own backyard. They're going to be recruiting globally. And that's what's going to happen, is those that have the real skill shortages are going to have to... Thinking outside the box isn't quite the right expression, but they can't carry on doing the same thing and expecting different results.
Well, it's like Dan said, attending a course for 3 months does not make you a chef. Okay, yep. Maybe in some trades you might be able to, or skills, a little bit of experience, some of it common sense, but anything that requires a good level of skill, take welding, MIG welding, TIG welding, whatever it is, you're not going to learn that overnight. And if the skill is not there and you've been trying, it's not suddenly going to miraculously appear overnight. You've got to look for where those workers are, but you are competing in a global marketplace. And
exactly. Yeah.
Wherever the best offer is typically where a worker's going to go. But that's the best offer, and then also the best working conditions. And I think that working conditions element is something I especially think in a post-COVID world, where it is about, well, okay, if this happens again, what does my life look like? Like we've said, Australia had really extreme closures, and rightly so in many ways, but it did mean a lot of workforces and stuff have been damaged as a result of it.
I'd also like to go back to that point I've just raised there, Chris. This ticking time bomb that I'm talking about, and the 30-year time frame that I estimated, is global shortage, where the musical chair game won't fix the problem at all. So there's the skill gone. I mean, what country is invested in skilled labour at the young age? China?
Yep.
India,
China. So the West, zero. You know, not just the West. The whole of Europe is zero. And I'm just thinking, Like, my son is such an anomaly at such a young age. He's the youngest, he was the youngest by a country mile on the oil rigs. He's like, where are they going to come from? They're not just going to materialise people when all these 40, 50-year-olds have retired.
No, it's the lack of glamorisation of those types of roles, isn't it? A lot of people want to be all these other things that they see because of the internet, social media, whatever. They see all of these other things that those core skills that people had no choice but to go into. Your dad was a carpenter, you became a carpenter, sort of thing. I also think, I don't know whether how much this will come into factor as things like automation and stuff like that, in terms of, I don't know what automation is like in Romania, Dan, maybe you can shed some light on that, as to whether those sort of things are going to be replacing those trades and skills that you're talking about, Pete, that may become possibly, I'd like to think not non-existent, but...
This is why registering on the Skills Provision website and getting your credentials out there is vital. Because the market's just, it's only slowly, the balloon that's deflating ever so slightly, there's going to be less and less skilled workers. They're going to be more in demand, and we're going to have, as we, you know, we've got 25,000 already signed up, you know, double that in the next couple of years, we're going to be well placed. But we're just one place.
Yeah, well, one cog in a huge, 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 huge machine.
Yeah.
You want to come back on that, Dan?
Well, I could say that technology in Romania is coming up, and it's coming up fast, but it will not replace. There are a lot of jobs to do which cannot be actually replaced by technology. Can be improved, but not replaced. Okay. So these schools still have to exist. These skills are still needed on the market. You said about a carpenter. Okay, they have technology now. They have electronic hammers or electric hammers or whatever. But the carpenter has to be there. Right. So these skills will be needed. And believe it or not, all signs of revitalization of these schools in Romania. Just they are too small to be seen, and the number of skilled workers coming out of those gates are too small to be considered.
Hmm. Yeah, I was going to say, the thing is, it's little bits of improvement, but we're talking about on a massive scale, aren't we, that's going to be needed to really push things forward. Exactly. And really see a massive change.
Perhaps we need to look at the Pins Breed and Nurse programme.
Yeah, and I suppose the thing is there an argument for, this is not just in Romania, but an argument for people being more pressured into pursuing certain opportunities because there is a need to do so, or taking the unemployed and making them learn certain skills and other things like that. But that's...
It will just become where there isn't any engineers that specialise in traditional artisan skills, so the wages will increase, the benefits will increase, the wages will increase, the benefit, until such times as people go, I want to do that. I don't mind getting dirty if I'm getting £150,000 a year. That's where it's going to go.
Yeah, money's going to drive things forward.
There'll always be an abundance of people wanting to sit in the nice warm offices and all that, but the physical, hard, difficult jobs that are out there, say in engineering, they're not attractive enough, and they don't pay anywhere near enough, and that's where the change is going to come. It will have to. Otherwise, companies are going to close down, and I don't see that happening, no matter what.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think we've had a pretty good discussion today. So thank you to everyone listening out there. Thank you to all of you for taking the time to speak today. So from myself, Francesca, that's goodbye.
Goodbye from Chris.
From Pete, I'd just like to remind all the listeners to whatever platform you're listening on to hit the like button, share, and subscribe to our channel. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
And from Van, just don't forget, create your profile whether you still have time on skillsprovision.com.
Very good, Dan.
I'm loving the plug in there. And if you are following on certain other channels, please follow, subscribe, recommend the pod, share, get the word out there. Take care, everyone, and stay safe.